Chapter 8, Step 2 of the 5 Steps of Success, Pre-Screening Prospects. This very well may be the most important chapter in this entire book, because the ability to tell the difference between a deal and a dud is the difference between success and failure. It's also the only way you can implement my credo, the less I do, the more I make. Some investors spend their time driving around looking at dozens of properties a month, even hundreds. This is not only a gross waste of time, but it's downright stupid. Chasing dead-end leads is similar to dealing with unmotivated sellers and can be a tremendous waste of time and energy. Unfortunately, many people never really learn how to avoid it. Well, I can solve this problem very simply. Pre-qualify every prospect that comes your way. I've found if you spend as little as 5 minutes getting pre-qualifying information from a prospect, you can avoid spending hours and hours gathering details about a property you never had a chance of buying. And any time you can spend minutes to save hours, it's like putting money in the bank. Some investors have a tendency to take a phone call from a prospect and rush right out to look at the house and hope something will develop, especially if the business has been slow. They'll be out there measuring for carpet and gathering useless facts before they even know if they have a chance to put the house under contract. What a crazy waste of time, especially when you know you should never leave your desk without a solid reason. Properly pre-screening a prospect helps you determine if further action is warranted. When making the initial contact with a prospect, you should ask yourself these three questions to determine whether you can make a deal or not. Can I buy the house at a wholesale price? Can I buy the house by taking over the debt? Can I option or lease option the house? Or can I buy the house making the seller a monthly payment and until I pay them off with owner financing? If the situation doesn't result in a positive yes to answer one of these three questions, you don't have a deal. It's that simple. There's no reason for you to waste any further time on the conversation, much less travel across town to look at a house you'll never own. 5 minutes is all it should take to determine if you can create a deal with a prospective seller. Of course, you'll have to take the seller's word on things like the condition of the house, mortgage balances, liens and judgments, and so on. However, if the information seems reliable and you feel that the seller is motivated to pursue one of the money-producing models stemming from the questions presented earlier, then you should arrange a meeting to verify your assumptions about the validity of the deal. When I leave my desk, my chances of putting a house under contract are about 80%. By the time I ease the old Mercedes out of the driveway, I'm fully qualified, my prospect, and I know what to be expecting, and I know I won't just be collecting a lot of worthless facts. Instead of being professional fact finders, we should get into the business of being professional contract writers. If you follow this pre-qualifying procedure on every lead, you'll save yourself a lot of wasted, unproductive hours, and you'll start to find the business really coming together for you, and you'll learn to protect your time. All right, let's start with the ugly houses, pre-screening junkers. This is really a simple matter of math if you're collecting these four items. You got to have these four items before you can make an offer on an ugly house. Number one, the R, the asked for repaired value. Number two is the asking price. And number three, the loan balance, if any. Number four, the estimated repair cost. I'll give you a magic formula to use when buying ugly houses it took me 10 years to create, and then I'll cover the four key items above. Now, this formula will never fail you, no matter where you live or what price the house you buy. It works in any city if you stick to it. Buying junkers is easy. If you sway from it, you're probably going to pay a horrible price. When you start using the swag theory, that's a scientific wild-ass guess. It's only a matter of time until you're going to get your rump slapped. Here's the magic formula when making all-cash offers. ARV times 70% minus repairs equals MAYO. ARV means after repaired value. In other words, the value of the property after you renovate it and get it in excellent condition. ARV times 70% minus repairs equals MAYO, maximum allowable offer. That's after repaired value. ARV times 70% minus total repair estimate equals maximum allowable offer, MAYO. However, MAYO is not what you'll pay. Your offer should always be at least $10,000 below MAYO, or don't buy the house. If you do, you'll pay too much, and that's not a guess. It's simple math and a lot of experience. If the house has an ARV above 300,000, I will allow you to use 80% instead of 70%. That's ARV times 80% minus repairs equals Mayo. Because you have a bigger dollar spread, I'll let you fudge on the percentages some. Forging a long, drawn-on explanation of what went on to the creation of my formula, here's a simple reality. Your net profit should be at least 20% of the sales price if you were to buy, fix up, and sell. Your other costs will eat up another 10 or 15%, which is at least 30% off the top for expenses and profit, not including repairs. Using the 30% number automatically adjusts the dollars as the value of the house goes up or down, although the percentages won't change. However, the cost of repairs is considered case by case, varying with every deal, so you can't put a percentage number in a formula that's reliable. So ARV times 70% means you've taken 30% off the top for profit and cost, except for repairs. That ensures at least 20% going to the net column, so you factor in your minimum profit before you make an offer. If you intend to wholesale this house to an investor, you can expect him or her to pay at or about Mayo for the house. Don't expect the investor to pay more. You must give the investor enough reason to want to buy the house. If you intend to sell at Mayo, you must buy the house cheaper than Mayo, or you won't make any money. Never offer more than Mayo. Always offer less than Mayo. The further below Mayo you can buy, the bigger your wholesale profit. Now, you may be wondering how you can buy a house this far below ARV. Well, the answer is simple. It must be ugly. Filthy, stinking ugly. The kind of ugly that repulses most people. A lot of rotten wood, termite damage, leaking roofs, overgrown shrubs and lawns, rats, roaches, dead animals, toilets overflowing with human feces, and on and on. The house should smell so bad when you open the front door, the odor drives you backwards. That's my kind of house. And mold? God bless mold. Mold is easy to remove. It's one man a linoleum knife cutting out sheetrock and putting it in a dumpster. But mold drives away potential owner-occupants and drives down the value. The uglier your house, the bigger the profit. Houses you can fix over a weekend with a little sweat and paint brushes are usually not the kind you can buy below Mayo. You'll spin your wheels on the wrong prospects if you miss this point and get no offers accepted. The next most important item when pre-screening ugly houses determine whether their prospects worth chasing or instantly passed over is this. There must be a big spread between the ARV and the asking price, or the deal is dead. An important pre-screening lesson. Whether you're buying a pretty house or an ugly one, there is one universal truth. You must never violate or you're a goner. This is a principle that many do violate in their early days of investing, most of them messing up and growing to hate real estate, even though real estate investing wasn't the problem. The real problem was the investor who didn't take time to learn the principle. Never buy a property unless you can get free equity the day you buy it, or know how to create free equity shortly thereafter. People who pay retail price for real estate don't understand this rule and usually live in the property. They're not in it for the money, but you are. Your profit can come only from free equity in the quick turn business. You must get it with the deal or you shouldn't buy the house. That's why a house where the seller is asking at or about ARV is not a house worth chasing. At least in the ugly house business. I mentioned earlier in the pretty house business, sometimes we can buy them at or about ARV as long as we get good, sweet terms so we can sell them with terms and raise the price a little to get paid. In the ugly house business, if you can't get free equity, it's a dead horse, so bury it now. You can't motivate an unmotivated seller. Move on quickly and find the people who want to deal with you. Whether it's a pretty house or an ugly house, your objective is to find sellers who need to sell, not just want to sell. Sellers who need to sell will make you rich. Sellers who want to sell will make you old and tired and will put you out of business. Find the people who want to deal with you and lose the rest at lightning speed. If you do, you should succeed. If you don't, you'll most certainly fail. I've been at this now for over 36 years, over 3,000 houses and over 500,000 students and counting. Not one thing creates failure more than trying to deal with the wrong people. It can only lead to rejection, discouragement, and failure. And that's why the spread is the big key when processing whether it's a junker or a prospect. The bigger the spread, the bigger the prospect. That's also why the ugliest of houses are usually the ones with the biggest spread. The seller is more motivated, therefore driving down the asking price and increasing the gap between the after repair value and the asking price. Many times you'll discover the asking price is close to or even below Mayo. When this happens, you have a hot prospect, and nothing should stop you from coming to terms. This usually occurs on only the really ugly houses. Now let's discuss how to find the ARV and estimate repairs. Before we do, remember, you must know the ARV, the asking price, the loan balance, and the need of repairs before you can make an offer. Never make an offer before you find out what a seller wants. If you let the seller speak first, you may discover they'll take less than you're willing to pay. You speak first and you'll never get lower. You instantly lost the negotiating process. What comes out of your mouth will determine what goes into your bank account. Never be the first to name the price. You must know the loan balance, and the only way to know it is to ask. So if a seller owes more than the amount you're willing to pay, a cash offer is out of the question, unless it's in default and you understand short sales. For you to not know what's owed, but then to make an offer for less than, it makes you look foolish and you may end the relationship quickly. Knowing the loan balance instantly tells us whether this deal is a good prospect or better suited for a subject to deal where we just take over the debt. Many times you can get a house for free by simply taking over the debt, putting up no cash, but still get a lot of equity because the house needs repairs. Here's an example of one I did recently. The house was worth about $115,000 after repairs. The dad had died and left the son with a house and a $52,000 mortgage, and it needed about $15,000 to $20,000 in repairs. Of course, that looked like $30,000 to $40,000 to the untrained seller who was a pharmacist. The seller called on the basis of our ad and said he just wanted out. He was sick of the house after devoting several weekends to it and simply lost interest. So we went to the house, met the seller, got the contract, later closed the purchase, and we owed $52,000 and got the house for free. The seller even agreed to make the next three payments simply because we asked. We spent $15,000 on repairs and cashed out at $114,900. Not bad for a free ugly house, huh? Well, how to determine the ARV, the after repair value? Well, there actually are several ways, but today the fastest and the easiest way to do so is go to realestateabc.com. That's realestateabc.com. It's a free website, and you'll find the comps all listed right there for you with a lot of the information you need to make an intelligent decision. Be careful, though, when you're looking at the comps. You're really only looking for the highest two that sold that were similar in square footage and were sold recently in the same area. You should spend a lot of time, or a little time, learning how to get at the true ARV, which is the current market value of the property in excellent condition, because if you get the ARV wrong, your offer will be wrong and you'll be spinning your wheels and accomplishing nothing. So getting the ARV is easy, it's free. Go to realestateabc.com and save it to your home screen, and there it is for you to use anytime you're trying to determine the value of a property. But again, your comp must be close in square footage to your subject, and that is the big trick. Make sure that you're apples to apples and not apples to oranges. You can't comp a 1,400 square foot house to a 2,000 square foot house. That's too big of a difference. So look for houses that are closer to your 1,400 and pick the top two that sold on there, and you have likely got your true market value. Be careful about Zestimates and Zillow. Zillow has a thing called Zestimate. It's also easy to get at, but not very accurate. Zestimate means their guess. And if I were you, I would go to look for the real comps and not take the easy way out and just pull up the Zestimate. The Zestimate, frankly, is rarely correct. Sometimes it's close, sometimes it is way, way off. We will definitely have more discussions on this when I get you to the live training. Next is estimating repairs. This one scares most people with no background in repairs. I guess we should be glad it does, because the public's lack of knowledge in this area is what creates the opportunity in junkers. Most people think it costs twice what it really costs to repair a house. It won't take long to get a handle on this. In fact, it's one of the easiest things to learn if you realize you don't have to be that close to make a deal. All you have to do is get in the ballpark. I've renovated well over 1,000 houses, and to this day I haven't got one right yet, but somehow I made money on all of them. I've never been correct on any of my repair estimates, not even once, but I've been close. Repairs always cost more or less than I anticipated, usually more, but it never killed the deal or caused me to lose money. I've always made a handsome profit on every rehab. You see, if you use the Mayo formula I gave you, there's a margin for error already built in. Besides, it's your buyer's opinion of repairs that counts, not yours, if you intend to wholesale the house. Usually wholesale buyers underestimate repairs anyway, so you can be way off and still wholesale the house. If your repair estimate seems to kill your deal, the problem isn't your estimate. The real problem is that you got away from your formula and used swag and you paid too much. And once that happens, it's downhill the rest of the way. You pay too much and there's just not much you can do to make it right. But if you buy it right, you can mess up the whole thing and still make money when it's over. Don't overpay. But don't worry, I'll make it easy for you to estimate repairs. You'll soon be doing it by walking around the house or looking at photos as I do. Here's my simple system. Most houses you find to wholesale or retail will be in the lower end of the market, ranging from 1,000 to 2,000 square feet and one or two stories. After a while, they all start to look alike. Your renovation costs will run between $15,000 to $50,000 on these houses, and 95% of the time they will be around the $30,000 mark. So the system you're estimating repairs comes simple. Your repair costs will be either 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, or 50. Just pick one. Get as close as you can. Now, obviously, I want to train you on this, and we do this by taking you out in the field and going to real properties and estimating real repairs and what we'd do to fix it and so forth. But in the meantime, don't let your fear of estimating repairs stop you from doing a deal. Yes, it really is that simple. Just trust your instincts, and you'll be in the ballpark with an estimate, but that's good enough to arrive at a repair cost for making an offer. But what if you're wrong? In fact, I'll guarantee you you're wrong. So what if you're wholesaling? It won't matter. If you're retailing, I expect you to get a real repair estimate from a contractor or two before you close anyway. So if you're too far off, you'll know, and you can either move forward or kill the deal or change the offer. So quit worrying about being wrong. We verify our assumptions if we're going to close. If we're going to wholesale it, our assumptions don't matter. It's our buyer's assumptions that count. Of course, if you are one of those analytical personalities, or thinker brains as we call them, you'll ignore my suggestions and dot every I and cross every T before you can make a decision. Well, while you're doing all of that and warming up your repair software program, my trained students and I will have made an offer, gotten accepted, sold the house and cashed a check, spent the money before you get around deciding what to pay. But hey, at least you'll feel good about your repair estimate on the house that you'll never buy. Ugly houses exit strategies. Most investors buy ugly houses to either wholesale quickly or rehab and retail to owner-occupants. Some investors keep them for rentals after rehabbing, but I don't like this plan because it involves long-term debt to raise the money to buy and repair, requiring a payment low enough for a positive cash flow. This debt is usually personally guaranteed, a cardinal sin to me. Then there are other, much better ways to buy keepers. The most common is just getting the deed by taking over the debt on not so ugly houses and or buying them with owner financing. And no, there's no personal guarantee involved, and there's no immediate urgency to pay off the underlying debt you took over. So whether you intend to wholesale, retail, or rent, the buying process is the same in ugly houses. Your exit doesn't change the Mayo formula if you're paying cash. And by the way, Mayo only applies if you're paying cash. It has nothing to do with the pretty house business. If you're new to the business, I'd strongly suggest you stick to wholesaling and get some checks before venturing into the world of rehabbing and contractors. For that reason, I won't be covering that part of the business in this book, but it's covered in my Ugly House Cash Flow System you can get on my website. In fact, if you go to ronsdollardeal.com, you can download the whole course for a dollar. In fact, it took an all-day seminar on 6 CDs, which has now been converted to audios, to cover from the time you purchase to the time you sell, so I can't do subject to that I can't do justice to a subject like that in this book. So go to ronsdollardeal.com and get my wholesale course for a dollar. And you'll have to join the Gold Club to do it for a 30-day trial. And you need to join the Gold Club anyway if you care about what we're learning here in this book. So now let's move into the world of pre-screening pretty houses to see how we can make some fast money without rehabbing. Pre-screening pretty houses. There's no Mayo formula that applies to pretty houses, but the rule about getting free equity stands. If you can't get free equity, why would you want the house? Fortunately, you don't have to have a lot of equity to make easy money. Because you don't have to raise cash to buy a house or repair it, you can operate with less equity and sometimes with none, and no costly entanglements. However, the same principle applies to the spread between the ARV and the asking price, whether a house is pretty or ugly. The best prospects are those with the most free equity. Now, the bad news is that most people who call you to sell their house, they all want all cash and pretty close to retail price. Well, they are not prospects. In fact, they're not even suspects. You can't work with them, and you should know it immediately on learning the ARV and the asking price are close. Remember, you can't make unmotivated sellers motivated. They either need to sell or they don't. You're working with the minority, not the majority. You're working with the few who are happy to take terms, not the many who want all cash at full price. If you don't internalize that, you're going to be turned off by the people who say no and probably won't be around long. Remember, business is all about math. Some will, some won't, so what? Someone's waiting. You only need one or two deals a month to make a darn good living. The good news is that some sellers who are willing to give up a substantial amount of equity in exchange for some debt relief and peace of mind. You'll know it as soon as you ask their opinion of the market value and the ARV, and then ask what they want. If the spread is big, you may have a prospect that needs to sell. If the spread is small and you still have a low payment and you can see a way to get a big, nice, non-refundable deposit from your tenant buyer, go for it. You don't have to have a lot of equity in the pretty house business, but I want to get as much as I can. Well, how big is big? Good question. The answer depends on your knowledge of your planned exit strategy and your personal financial situation. Here are your choices of exit strategies on pretty houses that you lease option from a seller, or you get the deed, or you buy with owner financing. Immediately install a lease option tenant buyer and get a non-refundable option deposit of at least 3 to 5% of the ARV. This is the most common and most profitable exit, and also the easiest and the quickest. Or you can sell for cash to a qualified buyer. That is my least favorite choice because you're killing the golden goose. It's laying the golden eggs. You're only getting one check now. You're not getting residual income, and you're killing that beautiful thing called property that you got for free, and you're giving up appreciation, depreciation, and all of the future benefits of the property. If you want to sell it for cash, you have that right. You have that option, but I think real hard about doing it. Of course, the third choice is you can move into it yourself. If you choose to sell with a lease option, your monthly payments on the subject to debt you took over or the owner financing debt that you created must be low enough to be covered by the incoming rent, or this choice is not available. The same applies if you're lease option from the seller. Therefore, your only choice is to cash out now if the payment is too high. In that case, you want more equity so you can make a decent profit. The minimum should be at least 10% of the sales price, but frankly, I wouldn't touch it for less than 20%. You can live with less equity if the payment is low because you can lease option the house to a tenant buyer quickly and pick up several thousand dollars from the option deposit. I'd suggest you get at least 10% of the value in free equity before considering to take the house, but I can tell you I have taken some houses with less than 10% equity. Too many deals are out there to get much more flexible on that. Here's an example to help you understand this a little better. A seller calls you with a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, 3/2 in good condition, worth $150,000. She owes $138,000 and the loan is current. On asking her the magic words, "Will you sell the house for what you owe?" you learn all she wants is debt relief and a quick exit. Her monthly payment is $1,182, which includes taxes and insurance. You figure it for rent for at least $1,200, $1,300 a month and maybe more. Armed with this information you collected in just a few minutes, the best plan is to get the deed. In other words, just take over the debt. Immediately put a lease option tenant buyer in the house for $159,000 and get a $10,000 to $15,000 non-refundable option deposit within a few days. You didn't get a lot of equity, but you'll still make a $10,000 to $15,000 upfront profit and still have a back-end payday. If your tenant gets financing to buy in the future, the payment is covered by rent, and you acquired a nice asset with no money or credit at really no risk to you because you did not any personally guarantee debt, and at the same time helping out your seller. So your seller got rid of the house, your buyer got in a house that they couldn't qualify for right now, she got her life back, you got a house, your tenant buyer got a home. Everybody wins. The deal I just described is a very common and widely available in your city. I'll bet there's one waiting for you within a mile or two from where you live. Even if the numbers are different, the technique is the same. This deal would work the same way whether you got the deed or you lease optioned it or you bought it with owner financing. The exit is still to lease option it to a tenant buyer, made possible because you got some free equity and took over a reasonable monthly payment that could be easily covered by rent with a nice spread. Even if you want to move into the house yourself, you'll want a reasonable monthly payment and some free equity. If you intend to option the house and resell it without the right to install a tenant buyer, free equity is the ruling factor because the more you can get, the more you'll want the deal. And I'd suggest at least a 20%, and frankly, I'd work to get more if my only profit is that difference between what I'm paying and what I'm selling the house for, less my cost. Earlier I mentioned a student who made $2,450,000 on one house. He did this by optioning an $8.5 million house for $4 million with a $100 deposit and selling it at an auction that he didn't deliver. He also sold some furnishings and a yacht belonging to the same seller and got a percentage of those items. The house had been listed with a realtor for 4 years with no sale. He moved it within 43 days by changing the exit strategy. And some people think the cost of education is expensive. Try ignorance. Point here is that on luxury homes, you must get a much bigger spread than 20%. Most of the time, you'll be selling well below market to move a house quickly, so don't back yourself into a corner by agreeing to pay too much. Anytime you deal in houses above $500,000, a 20% spread in most markets doesn't excite me. After all, a realtor and closing costs would eat up the 10%, and a seller who won't give up at least so-called equity, that much equity as a seller that I really don't want to deal with. I'd move on. The loan balance is another key element in pre-screening. A good sign the seller needs debt relief more than cash to sell is when the asking price and the loan are not far apart. If the loan and the asking price are far apart, on the other hand, the seller is looking for cash and some debt relief. Good news, most of the houses you lease option or get the deed on or buy with owner financing will require little or no cash. And in fact, many of the deals we do today are with absolutely nothing down to the seller. This type of deal will make up 70 to 80% of your pretty house deals and are easy to find. This week, I purchased two houses subject to. The first house is in excellent condition, is worth about $185,000. The seller owes $142,000 with a payment of $1,165 a month. He was asking $10,000 but accepted $2,000 and deeded me the house. That's $43,000 of free equity for $2,000. You don't need a computer to figure this is a good deal. The seller got what he wanted, debt relief and a fast, easy exit, and some moving money. The second house is worth $95,000 and needs $3,000 in cleanup. The seller owes $62,000 and wanted no money because she was behind two payments of $485,000. I got the deed and make up the payments as soon as the lease option the house to a tenant buyer. I'll do so as is on a work for equity program and let the buyer do the repairs in exchange for a little free equity. I expect to sell the house for $90,000. Remember, it was worth about $99,000 repaired. But I'll sell it as is with a minimum deposit of $3,000, more like $5,000, and as much as $10,000 from the buyer, and then I'll make the payments up from that. That's $28,000 in free equity that cost me nothing. To me, this deal is barely worth doing. It's kind of a waste of time. To you, it may be a home run, especially if it's your first deal. Dealing with unmotivated sellers is like kissing a toad with warts. It'll give you a bad taste for toads. Ron LeGrand.